Michelle Roberts joins us on Sports Byline. Michelle is an accomplished and well-respected attorney who is the executive director of the National Basketball Players Association and also the first woman to head a major American professional sports union. And the Washingtonian magazine called her and labeled her as the finest pure trial lawyer in Washington. She succeeded Billy Hunter in the position, receiving 32 of the 36 votes. Michelle, I've always wondered, did you ever ask yourself, what could I have done or said that would have gotten me the other four votes?
Well, the first thing I've been, I will admit, is that I've been trying to find out who those other four people were. My suspicion is that those four did not vote for any of the candidates. There had been some noise made by a few of the agents about their concerns about the transparency of the process, and there had been a bit of an attempt to start a movement to have the guys refrain from voting altogether. And I think those four players were pretty much acting under orders from their agents. But I can't find them. I've been looking, and I can't find them.
Tell me about growing up in the South Bronx housing project that you grew up in.
You know, I'll tell you, people assume that if you grow up in the housing projects, and maybe things have changed, but the assumption is that it's very dangerous, that there's no ability to have a happy childhood, that you're constantly worried about your next meal. I mean, none of those things were a characteristic of my childhood. I actually grew up in a single parent home, but I always felt very safe. We always had three square meals. I never went without a warm coat in the winter. It at that time was more of a village than a project. I knew all of the kids my age. We all played together. We all knew each other's moms. I confess there weren't a lot of dads around, but the moms didn't know each other. You know, anybody could discipline and would threaten to discipline any other child if they saw someone doing things wrong. So it was, we were clearly not wealthy. None of us had ever gone out of state. Every now and again, someone would have a visit to the South. But, you know, we all knew that we were not wealthy. We didn't have fancy sleepovers and, fancy camps. We played ball in the park. And so I frankly grew up fairly content. Again, felt fairly safe, made great friends that unfortunately that I didn't keep because I took a different turn. But it was a safe, fun, happy place. I didn't realize that I was poor and I was supposed to be miserable until I left.
There's a real wonderful mental image that I have having talked to my friends in basketball that grew up in that type of environment. And it's a summer night. It's about 90 degrees, 95% relative humidity, a blacktop, five shirts, five skins, and the light of the day is going down. There is not a better mental image in my mind, Michelle, than that.
And I can't tell you how many summer nights I spent hearing the sound of that basketball. I tell people that I swear to God, it was part of just the day. You wake up hearing it, and you'd go to bed hearing it. And I don't know how they did it, but some of the guys would play even past lights out. The project deliberately took the lights off the basketball court after a certain hour because the guys would play literally all night long if they didn't. Nonetheless, there would be guys playing, and I don't know how they could see the basket, but it was sort of the sound that I grew up hearing all the time. And when I hear it again, it immediately evokes memories of being a kid back in Melrose Projects.
Tell me about growing up, the experiences that set you on the path to law.
Well, it's an odd story, but true. My mother, before the age of court TV and before televised trials, for reasons I still can't figure out, developed an interest in watching live trials. We didn't live very far from the criminal court building, and I suddenly discovered that she was spending her free time going to court, watching arraignments, watching trials, just watching court. And I also don't know why I developed an interest in it, but I did. And she and I would together go and watch criminal trials. I was able to do it principally in the summer, of course. But I very quickly learned that's where I believed, at least, I belonged, in a courtroom. And I, as early as 8 years old, would, in response to the question, what do you want to be when you grow up, say, I want to be a criminal defense attorney. And so that's how it all started.
You know, that is a field that, you know, I don't know where the satisfaction comes from. Maybe you can help me a little bit. Tell me what satisfaction you got out of that area of law.
Well, I will say that I was not merely a criminal defense attorney. I was a public defender. And at that time in my life, what satisfaction came to me came because they were poor people who I knew and learned very quickly were otherwise represented by fairly incompetent lawyers. When I developed a love for being a trial lawyer, and then when I noticed at that time, friends of my older brothers, because I got older, some things worsened in the community, and some of my older brothers' friends ended up being arrested, and they had the worst lawyers imaginable, and I understood why. They didn't have the resources to retain good counsel. So for me, becoming a public defender, which is what I did immediately after law school, allowed me the satisfaction of thinking and believing, at least, that I was helping people who, you know, I'm not talking about guilt or innocence, I'm talking about fairness and allowing for the possibility of poor people having good representation. It was important to me, and it wasn't so much the criminal defense aspect that I found rewarding. It was just the point of helping people who otherwise didn't have the means to afford good representation. And so
I thought it was interesting that Harvard Law professor Charles Ogletree said about you, she does the homework and understands the arguments that need to be made. There won't be a time when someone across the bargaining table doesn't say, wow, I learned something. That must be a very high compliment. I would think you would take it that way as a high compliment.
Well, I guess I do, but I also wonder why that's not something everybody does. I mean, you know, preparation is it's what has gotten me far. I can't imagine not being prepared for any number of things that I have to deal with. And so, I mean, I got to tell you, within seconds after I realized that I was interested in doing this, I started reading the collective bargaining agreements from the last two or three work stoppages, and I'm still reading every day. I mean, it's not rocket science, but it is the case that there's been a lot that's happened with respect to the relationship between the union and the league, and I'm going to be bargaining, quote unquote, against people who have been engaged in this process for a decade, and you know the goal is to catch up and surpass. So, yeah, I mean, I have my staff doing the same thing. We meet twice a week to make sure that everyone is doing what we need to do to get ready for the CBA. And that means making a stronger union. So as we strengthen the union, we are increasing our ability and our leverage in connection with the CBA negotiations that, frankly, are going to start in the next couple of months. We're not going to wait until the last second. We're going to start talking soon.
Yeah, Michelle, it's one thing to have a passion, but when did you actually, what was the seed that was planted in you that made you want to go after this position?
Well, I've always loved basketball, and that love began in the projects. My brothers, though they were passionate basketball players, they had no talent, but they loved the game. And what they also did was make us all watch basketball on the one television that we had growing up. And so I grew up watching basketball, and I've always said if you watch basketball, you're going to love basketball. So I loved the game, and I always followed it. What led me to this position was understanding that, for reasons I could not at that time understand, that Hunter had been removed, but it had been almost a year, and no replacement had been found. And I thought that was curious because I did assume that there'd be, you know, throngs of people interested. And I don't know why, but I started thinking, well, maybe this is something you should look at, and the more I looked at it, the more I said, I've got to do this. I mean, I had to convince myself I could, and that frankly didn't take very long. But once I convinced myself that I could do it, and I wanted to do it, and then that I could do it better than anyone on the planet, I always convinced myself of that. there was no stopping. I was, you know, I had a very full life as a trial lawyer, but I managed to, whenever I had any disposable time, to just continue reading. You know, thank God for the internet in this day and time. And so I studied and studied, and the more I looked at it, the more I wanted it, and the more I knew I just had to go after it and get it. So
we got about 30 seconds before we have to break here, Michelle, for a second. Mm-hmm. But I'm just wondering, who were your favorite players and teams when you were growing up then?
Growing up, you know, it's a no-brainer. The New York Knicks had to love him. Willis Reed, that infamous,
yep.
You know, all that. So I've always been a big Knicks fan. Now, of course, I have 30 teams I can root for.
There you go. Michelle Roberts is with us. Again, very interesting, very accomplished woman, an attorney, who is the first woman to head a major American professional sports union. We'll continue talking with her as we continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on America's Sports Talk Show.